out there, you guys. It's time for another movie retrospective. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first Hammer movie that we've ever done.
Yeah, I think it is. Is it? I think we mentioned it before on the show, but, you know, seeing others. I think it's the first one we've reviewed.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd have to go back because we've reviewed a lot. But I'm pretty sure this is the first Hammer horror we've done. It's interesting because I actually wanted to do this one because Shudder just added three kind of a little bit lesser known Hammer films. And I watched all three of them, and like, they're all pretty good. But I probably, this is my favorite of the three that they added.
They're all restored. They look good.
They really do. Yeah. This is Twins of Evil.
Yeah.
Now this came out in 1971. It's actually the third film in sort of like a loose trilogy called, the Karnstein trilogy, or Karnstein if you prefer. Which are all sort of very vaguely based on Sheridan Le Fanu's Carmilla, which was kind of the OG vampire story, wasn't it? It came out 26 years before Dracula.
Yeah.
And also had a lot of that, lesbian vampire action, which Hammer loved so much.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about this movie, I will say, okay, so the other two movies in the Karnstein trilogy are The Vampire Lovers, which came out in 1970, and Lust for a Vampire, which came out in 1971. Now, I will say, I think The Vampire Lovers is the best of them. Lust for a Vampire is not very good. It's mostly just like an excuse to like show lots of tits, which most Hammer movies are, but it's like the cool thing about Twins of Evil and about Vampire Lovers is that, yeah, they show a lot of tits and like, yeah, there's a lot of that going on, but it also has like kind of a cool story and like other cool shit going on too.
Yeah. And Hammer films had high quality to them. The British made high quality films.
They did. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, it's where they're making Star Wars later on, you know. And if you wanted cool special effects, you could go to England and, you know, those guys worked.
Yeah.
And they're 70s movies, but they don't really feel like it too much. They actually feel more like an early 60s movie to me, like a super high quality early 60s movies.
Yeah.
It's just the way they looked, you know, the way they were shot, if you asked me.
I mean, Hammer did make, I mean, obviously nowadays when you talk about Hammer movies, most people think about the vampire movies, which this is a vampire movie, also has some witch hunting going on in there as well. But, you know, you think of Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and stuff like that. They made a bunch of other different kinds of movies too. I think they made like pirate type movies and like other kind of shit. But they're very strongly, associated with the gothic tradition of horror. Which some of them are very successful, some of them not so much. Did you ever see, I think this was a Hammer film, Dracula AD 1970, I think it was.
It was Christopher Lee, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was like groovy 70s plus vampires.
Yeah. There's some about them, though, they just kind of had a 60s feel to me. Might have been the hairstyles or something, but the quality was always really high on it.
Oh, yeah.
The way they were shot, production values, the costumes, sets, everything.
And I mean, there is probably a lot of leftover from 60s because apparently, I mean, Twins of Evil came out in 1971.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1971 was still pretty much the 60s. I mean,
yeah. They always had good looking people in them, though. Best looking women you find, they had them.
Well, the funny thing about this, now I should say that this was actually directed by John Howe, who is probably most famous for directing, guess what? Legend of Hell House. That's probably why I like this one so much and why it has kind of like kind of a more compelling story to it and shit like that. This, you know, among other reasons. But initially, this movie was supposed to be called like Vampire Virgins or something like that. It was like I said, it's part of a loose trilogy that's sort of kind of based on Carmilla.
See, even back in the 70s, they had clickbait.
Well,
you know what I'm talking about? You have to get somebody to come see the damn movie, you know what I mean?
So they were going to make it Vampire Virgins. I'm not entirely sure what the original version of the script looked like.
Yeah.
But when one of the people working on the film, like the producer or something like that, saw the two twins in Playboy, whose names are Mary and Madeline Collinson, they were like the first actual twin, you know, playmates of the month or whatever. Yeah. And he saw them and he's like, okay, well, we're going to put them in a movie and we're calling, it's going to still be a vampire movie, yeah. but we're going to call it Twins of Evil.
Yeah.
And
they're cute too.
Yes, they're beautiful yeah. girls. Yeah. And the interesting thing is, I don't think they'd ever acted before this. He just saw them in Playboy and was like, hey, we need to put them in yeah. a movie because they're super cute.
They could act.
It worked out really well. Yeah, actually, they were very good in it.
Yeah.
Because kind of the whole thing, and like I said, this is mainly a vampire movie, but there's also like a witch hunting kind of theme too. It kind of, you know, the story revolves around these two girls, and they, I guess their parents die, and they were from Venice, so they're like very fashionable and everything. So they end up having to go and live with their aunt and uncle in this little, you know, buttfuck nowhere town, like in Eastern Europe or wherever the fuck it is. And so when they get there, like, everyone's just gaping at them because yeah. they have these, like, super fancy, like, green dresses. They're dressed exactly yeah. alike. And, you know, with their cut. With all their curls and all their, yeah. you know, cleavage, like, yeah. heaving.
Push-up bras. Probably a bunch of silicone. It's hard to tell, you know. You don't know.
The funniest thing is, like, the thing that cracks me up. I love this movie so much. It is just, like, so charming to me. But I love how a lot of these Hammer vampire movies, particularly, it's like they don't even, like, they have no shame at all. It's like there's just a couple scenes where one of the twins is, like, out with all her, you know, dress on and everything yeah. like that. And she just leans way the fuck over yeah. the thing. It's like, hey, yeah. everybody right there. And it's, like, right in the middle of the thing.
Just like what Booty Warrior said. I got no shame in my game. You know what I mean? That's the way a horror Hammer horror film was. You know what I mean? Like, you know, action. You know, and she delivers her line, and she just bends right over, yeah, and just kind of fall out.
Let me pick up this thing off the floor.
That's right.
Like I said, they're not like ashamed.
You could
of
fuck
it at
a
all.
Star in one of these movies. Yeah.
I'll just be leaning over, picking stuff yeah, up picking all the time. It's like I'll be yeah. dropping things.
Yeah.
Just like looking down the front of my shirt.
Everything's just constant down blouse. Down blouse.
This is like down blouse the movie.
Down blouse the motion picture.
Yeah. Please tell me that there's like a softcore porno movie called that. If there's not, someone make it right now.
I'm going to make it if you don't have it. Down blouse the motion picture. Yeah. It's going to be kind of like a Star Trek. It's going to be like a Star Trek ripoff from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like V'ger and all that shit.
We just watched that last night. Yeah. That's what we're V'ger. Talking about.
Yeah.
But another thing, so Twins of Evil, I will say that the title is a little bit of a misnomer, because one of the things about it is when these two twins arrive in this like kind of backward superstitious town, one of them is kind of evil and one of them is like super pious, like good girl. So it's like a good girl, bad girl dichotomy. And like I said, I think it's cool that they actually,
twins.
Yeah. So they actually got two twins.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about it and
that
is that
does sound like a porn movie.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can tell that they're not acting because like a lot of the facial expressions they give each other are like, but yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because they, right. you know, obviously they're twins and they've grown up together. So it's yeah. like they have all these little like expressions they give each other. And I think like it lends a lot to their characterization.
Yeah.
Have to say though, okay, so they arrive in this backward town. I love how they're getting out of the fucking carriage, like I said, in these beautiful like mint green dresses, these big hats and curls and everything like that. And, yeah. like, all the dudes in town who are about to go boar hunting or whatever, they're just like, oh, don't honk,
honk,
like, you know what I mean? Like, they might as well...
They're all honking each other and shit.
I know,
yeah,
it's like,
elbowing each other.
Look at that.
Yeah, that was like, you know, old school Eve teasing, isn't that what they call that? Or what would they call that? I don't know. There's probably a term for it.
Yeah. But so they are sent to live with their next of kin, who are their aunt and uncle. Now, their uncle happens to be Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
And he is actually in a rare sort of a villain role. I don't want to say he's really like the main villain of the piece, because Count Karnstein, who is the vampire in the town, he's actually the main villain. But Peter Cushing plays a witch hunter named yeah. Gustav Vile. It's, you know, with a V, but Vile, yeah. you know, like evil. So I thought that was kind of funny. You know, he's got, like, the big round crowned hat and, like, the fucking black poncho and, like, the white collar. Yeah. So he looks badass.
Yeah, and he's got all these guys following him around, helping him hunt.
Yeah, the Brotherhood.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're basically straight up going around in their little carriage, and they're just like, they see this woman, like, for example, they just see this woman walking through the woods, like, gathering flowers in a basket. She must be a witch! Get her! Yeah, you know what I mean? And then they just, like, burn her at the stake. Because clearly,
yeah,
a woman can't walk around the street like gathering flowers. You must be up to something.
And they're all in on what they're doing. They totally believe it.
Yeah.
As they're like, you know.
So it's like in a lot of
conviction is 100%.
In a lot of ways, I mean, Peter Cushing has like, you know, his character Gustav has kind of like a redemption arc, I guess. Although I have to say that like he murders like a really lot of innocent women, so it's like I'm not sure that there's any redeeming that. Like by the time he gets like near the end of the movie, you know, with one of his niece's help and like with his wife's help, going to be like, "What the fuck, motherfucker? Why are you doing this?"
It's he starts to question it.
He starts to question it because what ends up happening is that because he's so strict. I mean, literally the first thing he says, because the two twins arrive there. Like when he's out, you know, burning witches or whatever it is that he does. How much does that pay, man? It must pay a lot. I guess that's what his job
is.
It's
kind of like an old boys network. It's just kind of like a club.
Yeah.
Seemed like a cult of
guys.
They
all go to this meeting house.
Let's go burn some witches.
Well, yeah. And it's like one of them says, because I watched it a couple times for this review, and it's like one of them just says, hey, there's this woman that lives like out at the edge and it's like she doesn't have a husband. Burn her!
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
You know, that's all the reason they need.
Yeah, but I tell you what, you know, Cushing, he has this ability to kind of project a powerful aura around himself.
Oh, yeah.
The damn movie. You know what I mean? You really take it, you know, take him seriously. He comes across as who he's pretending to be, especially in this one. And it's funny for a guy who probably weighs about 150 pounds, maybe 140.
Yeah. He really does have, he has such, like, charisma.
Yeah.
And I mean, him and Christopher Lee, I think that's why they were in so many movies and why they're so fondly remembered now.
That dude must have been anorexic. I mean, damn, he's just bones.
Well, this movie, too, I should say, he was supposed to be, he was in Vampire Lovers, which was the first movie.
Yeah.
He was also supposed to be in the second one, which was Lust for a Vampire, but his wife got sick.
Okay.
So they had to replace him with someone else. So his wife actually died. And then he ended up being in this movie, like, not that long after she died. Because he didn't want to, like, I guess he didn't want to be in his house anymore, like, without her. So he was, like, he just started working and he was, like, in a shit ton of movies after that. Because, you know, like I said, he was trying
I'm just saying, dude didn't weigh anything. I mean,
he was very small. But yet, he comes across as,
comes
like,
off,
really.
Comes off something like he's big.
Yeah.
But there's nothing really to him physically. Spindly.
I love his face. He has a great face.
Yeah, does that guy have any molars?
That fucking... I know! It's like, I kind of wonder that, too. It's like he had his back teeth pulled out to make him look more gaunt and skeletal.
Yeah.
He just has such great... It's just like a great bone structure, man.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know what I mean? I can see what he's got a great skull.
Yeah.
Weird. So I can see why he's in so many movies like this. And like I said, normally he plays a hero. He usually plays the vampire hunter. Which he is in this one, too. But I kind of like it because they weren't afraid to make him a morally ambiguous character. He's not a sympathetic character, not at all. Like, when you first meet him, literally the twins get there and he's out witch hunting or whatever. And they're like, hey, to their aunt, Kati or whatever her name is. And, you know, they're like, well, you might want to, like, change into black dresses because you're supposed to be still in mourning, even though it's been, like, more than 2 months since their parents died. And they're just like, what the fuck? Nobody does that in Venice. It's like, it's been 2 months. We wore black for 2 months, and now we're going back to our normal clothes. And she's like, oh, well, you know, this town is very superstitious. And it's like, you know what I mean? So literally, you know, Gustav Weil, you know, Peter Cushing's character, comes into the house. The first thing he says, he's like calling them peacocks, and he's going to like, and he just starts like shitting on them.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be surprising, because like I said, one of the twins, their names are Maria and Frida. Maria is the good one, and Frida is the evil one. So Maria is very religious, and she's, like, trying to, you know, smooth everything over. She's like, oh, of course, you know, we'll change into some other clothes or whatever. But Frida is just, like, not having it. She's like, look, I can't believe we had to, like, you know, move into this buttfuck middle of nowhere. And she's like, and she rightly, I think, is talking about the witch hunter group, and it's like, you know, they're just picking on all these innocent women, and it's like they get off on it and all this other stuff. And you really kind of sympathize with her because she's probably right about that. I mean, the fact that they're just going. So It's almost kind of like it's the way that she's treated that makes her, because she is kind of a little bit rebellious and because she has been put under these like strictures in her new household, she immediately becomes obsessed with Count Karnstein, who lives in this castle up on the hill not that far away. And he is like a Satanist, and he's, you know, he gets turned into a vampire kind of later on. And then so she gets super fascinated with him and wants to be all in on that. And so she kind of turns to the dark side, but it's understandable, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just because of the way she's gotten used to, and she's just like a normal girl. She's not like terrible or anything, but then she gets kind of sucked into like Count Karnstein's, you know, world of Satanism and human sacrifice and whatnot.
What I liked about the movie, though, is it started off with the witch hunter guy, you know, he's definitely a dick.
Yeah.
And he's definitely doing the wrong thing. But by the time he gets done dealing with this vampire, he starts questioning all the witch hunting and stuff that he'd done before, and that maybe, you know, he'd killed all those people for nothing. You could tell he's like questioning it. He's like, wait a minute, I was killing these women, and they couldn't really do much. But once he can see what a vampire could do, he's just like, well, that's what the supernatural looks
right,
like.
Right, that's evil.
So, yeah, that's what the supernatural, actually, or not supernatural, but paranormal, that's what the paranormal really looks like. So, damn, I guess I killed a bunch of innocent people. And then he kind of becomes like a hero in a way, having realized that he was wrong, which that's not usual for a movie.
That's what I mean. That is, in a way, that's why I probably like this one. I mean, like I said, Vampire Lovers is amazing, but I like this one because it's not afraid to have this moral ambiguity. Yeah. Because, like I said, Peter Cushing is usually the hero. Really, the nominal hero of this is the guy, Anton, who is like the love interest of first Frida, but then she kind of goes off to the dark side, so he kind of gets in with Maria because they look alike. What's the difference? But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
I guess you could say that his character was kind of like a dick who became, in a way, like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Probably be a good way to describe it. But it's an unusual twist for a movie of any time, of any kind.
It is. And it's also an unusual, I think it's also unusual to combine the vampire thing with the witch hunting thing.
Right.
Usually it was one of the, you know, you had Witchfinder General with Vincent Price. You had like, you know, those kind of Blood on Satan's Claw, like those kind of like folk horror and stuff. And then you had your vampire movies. But this one kind of combined. Now, the thing about it, like I said, I guess if you're looking for like, you know, a timeline of like where these three movies fit together, I've heard that this one is kind of like a prequel to The Vampire Lovers, because really the only thing that connects them is the Karnstein family. And in this one, Carmilla Karnstein, who is called Mercalla in this one, because in Vampire Lovers she was called Mercalla. She had like a bunch of names that were like, you know, mix-ups of Carmilla. But she's actually already dead in this one. And then somebody gets killed, like Count Karnstein, the main villain, he sacrifices a girl in a satanic ritual because he's like, oh, all this satanic stuff is getting so boring, I need to really do a human sacrifice and blah-de-blah. So the blood falls on Carmilla's coffin and she wakes up and turns him into a vampire. Now, another interesting thing, too, that is kind of original is that in this one, if you get bit by a vampire, you don't necessarily turn into a vampire unless you're an evil person who is willing to take on the whole Satan thing.
Right.
If you get bit by a vampire and you're a good person, you just die.
Okay.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. I can't really think, and I can't really think of another...
That's kind of a good angle.
I know, I like that.
That way you can pass moral judgment on a vampire, like you accept it.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
You're bad.
And that's what made him a bad person. Was, I mean, he was already like one of those decadent rich people. It's just he was like raping peasant women and keeping them chained up in the dungeon to play with and all this other kind of shit. And then he goes full on into the Satanism and into the human sacrifice and everything like that. And then the fact that he brings, kind of accidentally, but he brings Carmilla back, who's like his distant relation or whatever. And she's kind of like, I mean, she's only in like one scene, and it's not Ingrid Pitt who played her in the first movie, but she's basically just like, hey, you know, do you accept the whole vampirism thing? You'll be undead and you can walk around. And he's like, yeah, that sounds pretty awesome, actually. You know, so, you know, you have to accept Satan. And he's like, yeah, can do. So, like I said, he's accepting it. Yeah. And now Frida also accepts it at some point. She's kind of reluctant at first, but then she's kind of like, yeah, why not? You know what I mean? So she kind of has like a tragic arc where it's like a downfall. Like I said, you can understand why she does it because she's a little bit rebellious at the beginning, but she's not a terrible person. But as she gets like sucked farther and farther into like, oh, I said sucked there. That was funny. I didn't even intend that. But, you know, because vampires and everything. Yeah. As she gets kind of further drawn into this, into Count Karnstein's world, you know, she just starts to lose her moral compass, like, altogether. And, you know, as you said, as Peter Cushing's character, Gustav Vile, is actually finally coming to terms with all the bad shit that he did. I mean, murdering innocent women like you do, just kidnapping
them. Well, they thought it was real.
Yeah.
They thought it was real. They thought they really were witches.
Yeah.
And I think he basically just comes out and goes, there aren't witches. There are vampires.
Yeah. That's Anton tells him that because he's like, look, you know, all these people are going missing and they're like going, because Count Karnstein has been operating pretty much above the law because he is like a favorite of the emperor. So it kind of like makes a,
it humbles his ass.
Well, and it makes an argument, like the movies kind of make an argument too about like how this powerful man can get away with everything while all the peasants are just like,
well, that happened.
Right,
that's
exactly.
That's historically accurate.
Right, exactly. And it kind of goes into, it doesn't like come out and say this explicitly, but they're saying that, you know, Peter Cushing's character, the whole Brotherhood, it's like they really, really want to get Count Karnstein because they know he's evil, but they can't get to him because he's protected, so they're going after easier targets.
Right.
You know, defenseless women. And someone actually does kind of point that out to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what, it's like, that's the guy you really want and you're too much of a pussy to go after him because he's protected by the emperor.
Actually, they're committing evil. They didn't know it, but they were committing evil on innocent people.
Right. So like I said,
they were monsters.
You know, between finally, like, as it goes on and, he realizes the vampires are real and stuff like that, and through discussion with his wife, who finally, like, calls him on his bullshit and it's like, what are you doing? Also, Anton, who I wanted to say was played by David Warbeck, who most of you Lucio Fulci fans will recognize from The Beyond. He was also in The Black Cat, I think. So he's in this, too. And he's kind of like the good guy. So between that, he finally gets to, you know, a point where he feels bad for, like, all the shit that he did before. So, you know, it's just kind of, like, got so many different interesting aspects to it that you don't really see in a lot of Witchfinder movies or in a lot of vampire movies. Like I said, that one where you actually had to accept Satan, I don't know how widespread that trope is, because you don't really see it all that
well,
much.
Well, it's well-written gothic horror that's a lot more modern than what we were used to. You know, we're used to damn, you know, Frankenstein, Dracula, that's 1800s stuff, you know, so the original stories were not that complex.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the genre. Well, this stuff's all coming out of the 70s, and you know, whoever's writing it understands the genre, and they know the formulas, and they can come up with some good twists to a gothic horror story. And I like the fact that, you know, they kind of were taking certain things that you would see in the 20s and the 30s before all those damn rules came when it came to making movies.
Yeah, Hays Code or
the
whatever
Hays Code. They're taking some of those elements and bringing them up to 70s standards. Because, you know, all these skimpy outfits and all this sexual innuendo, that was going on back in the 20s and 30s. Go look at The Black Cat with Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi. It's not a long movie, but boy, there's a lot of sick-ass fucking sexual undertones about necrophilia, stealing people's daughters, incest, multi-generational kind of...
People
weird
love prurient stuff like that, but it's just at different times you could get away with more.
And they were wearing sheer gowns that you could basically pretty much see through, and you go, man, this is an old black and white movie.
Yeah.
And human sacrifice and human sacrifice and weird shit like that. And they're Boris Karloff praying to Satan, and you know, it sounds like an authentic satanic, you know, speeches and shit. Well, it was before all those codes.
Yeah.
And it was an original story. I think it was 20s or was that 30s, Black Cat?
Pretty sure that was 30s.
The early 30s. Probably early 30s. And it had a real cool Art Deco kind of style to it. And you would think that something like that was coming out of the 70s, but no.
Yeah.
Old. 30s.
Yeah. It's really amazing, like how...
30s, yeah.
Those pre-code movies.
They're pretty
They hot. Got away with
a lot of shit.
And then, you know, it was, like, so staid for, like, a couple of decades, and then finally, you know, 60s and 70s came along, and they're just, like, they just started putting whatever
in
movies
again.
And again, it went back to that. And Hammer was like kind of at the forefront of that.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Hammer film was a lot like a early 30s horror movie.
Where they call it like, you know, bloodletting and bosoms.
Yes.
That was kind of, that was their formula.
Yeah. It sold tickets, evidently. People went to pay for them damn boobs.
I mean, boobs and blood, who doesn't love that?
Yeah.
Come on.
But yeah, I recommend Black Cat. See that one. You can probably see that free on YouTube.
Yeah, you probably can.
Yeah, it's
cool. Like, I can't remember what year it was, but the first Dracula was 1931, and I'm pretty sure it was after that.
Yeah,
but
and the Black Cat had nothing to do with Edgar Allan Poe. It's just loosely based, you know, just...
A lot of, yeah.
Based just around that damn title.
Yeah.
And I think it's only maybe a 40-minute movie, maybe. It's not long from
Yeah, they didn't make them. They made a lot of short ones back then. I guess because it was just, like, so tedious making them. Yeah. It was, like, much harder to make them back then.
Yeah.
You could make the whole thing on a computer. But yeah, so Twins of Evil, like I said, third of the Karnstein trilogy. Also, Shudder just added it. They also added another Hammer movie, another really good one called Hands of the Ripper, which is about Jack the Ripper's daughter. That's not a spoiler alert because they established that within like the first 2 minutes of the movie, that's who the killer is Jack the Ripper's daughter. That's also very good. And actually, a fun fact, was usually when Twins of Evil played in the U.S., it was usually on a double bill with Hands of the Ripper. Hmm. Shudder also added another Hammer movie called Vampire Circus.
That's a good one. I like
which,
that one.
Yeah, it's that one's a lot more campy than Twins of Evil, but it's still pretty fun. It's also tied into Twins of Evil because they both used the same sets.
That's another boob fest. And it's got Darth Vader's in it.
That's right. I forgot. Yeah, David Prowse.
David Prowse.
He's not like a it's not like a huge role. It's like a pretty small role.
He's a circus strongman, if I remember.
Yeah, he's a circus strongman.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one's also pretty decent. So if you have Shudder, like I said, you might want to check those three out. And as like I said, as far as I know, I think this is the first Hammer movie we did. I hope it's not the last one because I like a lot of the Hammer movies.
Oh, they're going to be putting them up there.
Yeah, so maybe they'll add some more and we'll do some more. But yeah, Twins of Evil, go to Shudder and check it out.